They estimate that with every other heartbeat, a murder is committed. A heart is stopped by a killer. But unestimated is the number of hearts attacked and torn. Destination, freedom. Destination, freedom. Dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people is brought to you by Station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. It was well said by the late H.G. Wells, "There is no more evil thing than race prejudice. It holds more baseness and cruelty than any other error in the world." And for the complete eradication of this evil from American society, and so that men may know it and oppose it for what it is, Destination Freedom this week brings you its second chapter of a two-week series bearing directly upon race prejudice, a chapter entitled Execution Awaited.
The history of mankind has been in part the history of the overcoming of fear and prejudices. Man has been on this earth but a few thousand years. But within that span, he has collected evidence against the forces of nature which he must master. The hurricanes and storm winds, drought and famine, disease and disasters which he knew could destroy him. And also in that span, evidence has been collecting against another, more insidious enemy. A murderer unmatched. A Trojan horse that has often been indicted, tried, convicted, sentenced, but seldom executed. That enemy our bailiff calls to the witness stand for trial.
Prejudice! Prejudice! Race prejudice!
The trial will take place not in a public court, although the defendant has been the instigator of many trials in public court, but in your own community, your workshop, your place of business, in your home, among your family and friends, and more so, in the secret cells of your subconscious, wherever we might find
prejudice, prejudice, race prejudice.
You'll notice the defendant doesn't respond to a direct call. He hesitates to show his face. He avoids direct questions. But sometimes he can be found quite plainly in public places, as in 1944 in the Senate chambers.
And I'll tell people who prattle nonsense about race equality after the war, I say when those 2 million Negro soldiers, whose minds have been filled and poisoned with political and social equality stuff, return and try to... I think I'll get more help in sending them back to Africa. I have one thing in mind...
Prejudice! Prejudice! Prejudice!
Yes, we may find the defendant in the U.S. Senate. Or we may find him in an employment office.
Very, very, very sorry, young lady. But you see, that ad you saw in the paper should have specified that we want only white clerks, not Negroes.
Prejudice! Prejudice! Race prejudice!
Or he might reveal himself in a friendly gathering over a scotch and soda on a club car. And he might be quite gay and merry.
That was a good one, Pat. That was a good one. But you know, I just can't get myself to tell those jokes about Negroes. And Pat, you said a bad thing a minute ago. You know, when you said that you don't hire Negroes or Jews in your plant, I wouldn't let that policy stand one day in my factory. Why, my whole janitor staff is Negro. And as for Jews, well, some of my best clients are Jews. Friends, too. Why, you know, fellas, there's quite a few exceptions among those kikes. Why...
Prejudice! Prejudice! Race prejudice!
All right, all right. You don't have to keep hounding me. I'm coming. I'll get up on your witness stand. But I'm not going to let you railroad me into anything. What do you want with me?
It's your record with the human race that we're bothered about, Mr. Prejudice. We want that record.
All right, all right. I'm willing to be tried. I've been up for trial before. Get on with the routine.
I'm sure the Jews, the Negroes, the Catholics, the Mexicans, the Italians, the Irishmen, the Chinese, the Poles, the Japs have framed me, but get on. Ask your prejudice. I'm waiting.
Very well. Will you tell the court your full name, please?
I am Race Prejudice.
I see. Your Honor, in order to clearly establish the defendant's identity, I'd like to call upon Mr. Webster of the dictionary to identify prejudice.
Prejudice, an opinion or judgment formed beforehand or without due examination. Preconceived judgment of opinion. Unreasonable predilection for or objection against anything, especially an opinion or leaning adverse to anything without just grounds or before sufficient knowledge.
Thank you, Mr. Webster. Now, Mr. Prejudice, tell the court how long you've been with the human race.
We prejudices have been with the human race ever since there's been a human race.
Were you born in the race?
Well, no, not exactly. We were sort of adopted, in a way.
How did that come about?
We got in during the childhood of the human race, I'd say, when men and women lived in caves and clustered about in tribes. Way before men understood the elements. Everything around them was unknown and mysterious, and they lived in a world of superstition. And people were afraid most of the time. We were called into service quite a bit. We gave prejudices to they passed it on. We had to keep doing that because each child that was born came out fresh and clean, and we prejudices had to work on him.
Your Honor, the people, as to the origin of prejudices, I submit as evidence this statement from Miss Hortense Powdermaker, professor of anthropology of Queen's College.
Every bigot was once a child. The infant is not born with prejudice. The child absorbs prejudice unconsciously through his parents and other people in his immediate environment. His prejudices are strengthened by false generalizations from his experience and by his own insecurities. It is society which determines against whom he shall be prejudiced.
Don't you think I know who determines who's to be discriminated against? I know all that. The prejudices my forefathers had what one might call a field day among primitive peoples. In fact, it was during that time we discovered the things essential to our survival.
Will you tell the court those things?
Well, we noticed that we always did better whenever three conditions prevailed.
Go on.
The first condition necessary for successful prejudice was fear.
Go on.
Insecurity.
Yes, what's the third?
Well, somebody in power. Somebody who would push the prejudices along and exploit fear and insecurity for his own economic, emotional, or political benefit.
I see.
Then the prejudices, my honorable forefathers, noticed another thing or two about the human race.
Yes?
There was the old human habit of wanting to belong to the class, the group, the tribe, the clan in power. I don't know which one of my ancestors first peeped into a human subconscious mind and heard.
I don't know how I'm going to make it in this world. I'm quite untalented. I don't have any power. And all around me, there's so many things I don't know about. I'm really just a nobody. I don't know how I'm going to make it. If I just had something to hang on to.
That was the kind of people the prejudices would whisper to way back in the cave days, just as they do now in the day of the skyscraper. Why? Why do you call yourself a nobody? You must be somebody. You've got the same color hair as Tribe Chief Sodo. In fact, you belong to his clan. You were born to rule. You don't have to compete with the other tribe. In fact, they should serve you the way they're serving Tribe Chief Sodo.
Why, there must be something to that. Everything good in the tribe comes from Chief Sodo's people. I'm one of his people. I must be good, too. It's got to be that way. Chief Sodo would cut off anybody's head who said it was not that way. I'll help him cut off heads if necessary. My tribe is superior. All others are inferior. It's got to be that way. Or else I'm really nobody. And I can't... I just couldn't stand that.
You see how the prejudices work?
We played on this fear and insecurity like a drummer on his drums. And soon we had them hating anyone in the tribe that looked different or dared to challenge their authority. It was in those primitive days that my family discovered another weak link in the human armor.
And what was that?
It came about this way. The tribal chieftains used to call the members of the village together to ward off evil spirits. When there had been a plague or famine in the land, the people looked towards their leaders for a way out of their depression. The chieftains naturally wanted to stay in power, and they knew someone had to take the blame for the conditions in the village. So at first, they would show the people how to pour all their sins and weaknesses and failings and misfortunes into the body of an animal, a goat. Then they'd drive him out of the village, and with him would go their sins and the plague, they hoped. That was the first scapegoat. It wasn't long before the chieftain saw an even better goat.
What was that?
Oh, people! Yes, the chief saw how fearful and insecure their peoples were, and when there had been sufficient prejudice built up against a tribe member, someone who had broken a taboo or had committed some prohibited act, or when there were ambitious nobles who had people they wanted to be rid of, naturally they called for those prejudices. And with the scapegoat system, well, he would sacrifice a human to the gods to atone for the sins of the community. Oh, my family cultivated the scapegoat system down through the ages. The rulers not only allowed us prejudices to spread, they helped stimulate our growth, especially when it was against a group that was coming in with radical ideas. Against radicals, prejudice was potent. The most important radical the prejudices ever had to deal with caused us some trouble, though.
Who was that?
Jesus Christ.
Prejudice made him a scapegoat?
Jesus and the Christians. Christians at the time were mainly poor people, slaves or laborers, and their creeds differed from those of the emperors. Nero, Domitian, Trajan, Marcus Aurelius accused them of every ill in the world.
But the Christians won out. How?
It so happens, perseverance and the truth have always been the deadliest enemies of the prejudice family. Always have.
I see. Then I suppose your family gave up scapegoating.
Oh, no. We went to work on the Christians.
How?
We found plenty who didn't practice what they preached. Plenty who would go along, as my ancestors discovered, with those in power. Pretty soon we had some Christians making scapegoats of the Jews, of heretics, of people who differed from their doctrines, or who attempted to introduce the light of science during the Dark Ages. Prejudices made them torture and execute men like Galileo, Giordano Bruno, Roger Bacon, John Huss. There was the Spanish Inquisition, the murder of Joan of Arc, massacre of St. Bartholomew, burning of Ridley, Latimer, Cranmer. Oh, and prejudices reached over into the New World, to New England, and touched off the search for witches.
There he be, Judge. This is the man who cast a spell on my granddaughters and caused the crops to rot. Yeah.
I did no such thing. She's lying, Judge. She owes me money. She's trying to escape pain.
You have been duly identified and proven. You know the law. If any man or woman be a witch, that is, hath consulted with the devil, they shall be put to death. Guard, take the prisoner to the stake.
No! Jake, I swear I'm innocent! No, please, I'm innocent!
I don't know how many thousands were burned at the stake, or were drowned, or were stoned to death in the witch hunt. Must have been a lot, though.
And that was the heights which the prejudices reached?
Yes, but their offspring was destined to reach higher.
Explain to the court what you mean.
It was just about this time that I came into existence. I was a new kind of prejudice, using all the old tricks. Oh, I'm still rather young. I haven't celebrated my 100th birthday yet. But I've caused more death and misery than all my ancestors.
Do you mind telling the court just when and where you were born?
I can't put my finger on the date or the place. It was the times that brought me in.
What times?
slavery times.
Yes, go on.
Well, I was an illegitimate son of religious prejudice and the new merchant class around the beginning of the 18th century. Of course, you know, before then there had been slaves, white slaves, black slaves, Romans, Egyptians.
Yes, yes.
And all over the world, I hate to admit it, there was growing a liberal spirit against any kind of slavery and against the rule of the aristocrats over the commoners. But it so happened that when the African slave trade was underway, it proved so profitable to a few that some looked for a way to justify it somehow and beat down the demands of common people of Europe for more freedom. Kill two birds with one stone, so to speak.
Go on.
It was a dilettante, Count de Gobineau, that gave the aristocrats the escape they were looking for. He came into an important council meeting with his theory.
Monsieur, monsieur, one moment, monsieur.
As you know, I've been doing steady research into the history of civilization. Now, a good many merchants are worried about the effect of the slave trade upon the morale of the common people in France. Yes, well, I have discovered we no longer need worry about the black slaves or the white common people. I have discovered that everything noble, beautiful, inspiring, significant that has ever happened to the world was the product of one race. Our race. Oh. The Teuton, the Nordic race. No other race need to be considered. They are destined to serve us. The amount of Nordic blood in each nation is a very fair measure of its strength in war and standing in civilization. Officially, I suppose you could say that was when race prejudice was christened. It kept down the rising demands for freedom of the French peasants and tried to justify the enslavement of Indians and Africans. All in all, I enabled the merchants to strip Africa of one-fourth of its population, half of whom died in transit to slave lands. I enabled the masters to play poor white against black and keep them from disturbing the profits the rulers were making off them. Oh, I did quite well for a youth.
And was there no one to oppose you?
Oppose? What do you mean?
Your Honor, many men and women soon saw the fallacy in race prejudice and have opposed it and spoken out against it. I submit as evidence this statement from Tom Paine.
So deeply rooted were all the governments of the old world, and so effectually had tyranny established itself over the mind, that no beginning could be made in Asia, Africa, or Europe to reform the political condition of man. But all attempts to oppose progress will in the end prove futile. Reason, like time, will make its own way, and prejudice will fall in the combat with interest.
That Tom Paine and the likes of him, naturally they opposed me, but they were in the minority.
And I want to submit the evidence of another minority. The 4 million slaves who carried out 200 revolts, countless escapes, and built an underground railway to oppose prejudice. I submit as evidence, Your Honor, the statement from ex-slave Frederick Douglass.
Under the skin, all men are the same. And everyone must join in the fight to further human brotherhood. Peace between peoples is not to be secured by degrading one race and exalting another, by giving power to one race and withholding it from another, but by maintaining a state of equal justice between all. Prejudice is a spirit infernal against which every enlightened man should wage war.
Of course, the slaves were against me. I only tried to make this a government for white men. They supported me.
Your Honor, I submit as evidence against the defendant the lives of John Brown and Wendell Phillips, William Lloyd Garrison and Elijah Lovejoy, of Abraham Lincoln and Levi Coffin, of Harriet Beecher Stowe and Lucy Stone, and I recall the words of Thaddeus Stevens.
Demagogues of all parties shout, "This is the white man's government." Does not this contradict all the principles of the Declaration of Independence? Our fathers repudiated the whole doctrine of the legal superiority of families and races and proclaimed the equality of man before the law. This is not a white man's government. This is a man's government. The government of all men alike, Equal rights to all the privileges of the government is innate in every immortal being, no matter what the shape or color of the tabernacle which it inhabits. Race prejudice must be destroyed.
Yes, men like him made it difficult for me to operate in the United States, I admit. But after the Civil War, I went back to my old stomping grounds. There was fear and insecurity, and I managed to make race prejudice the law of the land in some states.
I see. White supremacy gave you a good start.
Oh, it wasn't only against Negroes I operated, Your Honor. Earlier in the century, I did quite a bit of work on the Irish.
Yes, the court is aware of it. I submit, Your Honor, this document from historian Kenneth M. Gould on the work of race prejudice against the Irish.
Race prejudice inflamed Native Americans to direct action against Irish immigrants. They swept them into the worst sections of eastern cities, accused them of introducing pauperism, slums, corruption, and crime, blamed them for unemployment and panics, denounced them as clannish, unassimilable, and half-witted. At the same time, race prejudice had it that the ultimate aim of Catholicism was to be the overthrow of the government. As a result, many Irish were dismissed from their jobs and want ads appeared reading, "No Irish need apply."
True, true. I worked hard against all immigrants. Soon as one was settled, I turned him against the newcomers. But it hasn't been in this country where I've reached my peak yet.
No?
I reached my highest state of development overseas.
Go on.
I went back to work on the scapegoat principle. I caught a people just ripe for it, and a psychotic man, some say somewhat demented, willing to exploit it to the limit.
Who was that?
Herr Hitler! Well, I needn't tell you about how I helped him. He said that the Jews are the root of all evil, that the extermination of the Jews is the first step to cure the world. And, well, I had been all over the world and had befuddled so many people that most folks were deaf to his early cry. Didn't think he'd carry out Mein Kampf. Ah, but he did. He used race prejudice to murder 12 million Jews, Germans, Russians, Gypsies, Poles, Italians. Oh, once I got started, I didn't intend to stop there. Neither did he. When it was over, I had poisoned the heads and hearts of so many people, it'll take decades before they see straight again.
And how do you get away with your murders, Mr. Prejudice?
Oh, I can't say. The human race just naturally takes to me, I guess.
No. Your Honor, I'd like to call a witness to the stand, one who survived race prejudice's highest rampage, the Hitler regime. Will you tell your story, Herr Lager?
The Nazi. They pounded my face to a jelly. My upper lip was cut. My eyes were bunged up, and still they rained blows on me. Then something struck my head, and I remembered nothing. When I awoke, my tormentors were shaking me by the shoulders. I was lying in a pool of blood. It was then I understood. More than once before, I had seen such pools of blood, and I had gone by and shrugged my shoulders and said, another Jewish student beaten up. But this time, the victim was myself, a Christian. I guess I brought it on myself. I had never bothered to join with the Jews and fight fascism when it first began. They had to nearly kill me before I understood that race prejudice never stops at one race.
Why, that's unfair testimony. Your Honor, I've stopped at one race in a good many places. Take some parts of the United States. That was unfair testimony.
Your Honor, I'll take testimony from a part of the United States. I'll call on the words of Hampton Wade of Alabama, former Ku Klux Klansman. Mr. Wade, will you tell the court what happened to you recently in your home state?
Well, I'd gotten into the Klan, like my foreman told me. And we started out attacking Negroes, keeping them in the place, you know.
Go on.
Well, it wasn't long before we had to flog and attack some white people, too. Our leaders said some of them kept getting out of place. Then we were going about attacking anybody who yelped against us. And since nobody has opposed us strong, we could practically run my state. Then it came.
Yes?
It got so most of the people we were called on to flog were white people. And then one night some men in Klan uniform grabbed me on the road and flogged me till I couldn't move. I tried to tell them I was a member of the Klan too, but it didn't matter. They didn't like me, they said, because my folks were Italians. They were going to eliminate all Italian Klansmen. I guess then I woke up. Only a few guys at the top were holding the power. And as far as they were concerned, everyone belonged to an inferior race. That's all, sir.
Your Honor, I want to submit more evidence of the nature of what happens to communities where race prejudice is legalized or allowed to spread unchecked. The Federal Bureau of Investigation figures show that the southern section of the United States, although its population is smaller than many other sections, leads all other areas in murder, including manslaughter and aggravated assault and battery. Also, I submit, Your Honor, one main prop for race prejudice is stereotypes and distortions about a people. As evidence, I submit the testimony of historian Dr. Herbert Aptheker on this same subject.
The Negro's past runs through the warp and the woof of the fabric that is America. The past has been clouded by distortion and omission. Let the American people know that in the unspeakable days of chattel slavery, the American Negro fought like an enraged tiger for his freedom. In the American War for Independence, Negroes by the thousands were vital participants. 1/6 of the United States Navy, which defied Britain in the War of 1812, was Negro. In the Civil War, the Negroes suffered the greatest proportionate loss of any participants. Let these things be understood, and the ancient canon, which holds that the Negro people, unique in all history, were given their freedom, would be seen for what it is, a colossal hoax and lie. The Negro people earned their freedom by fighting for it. Let all this really be known and understood, and then decent white people might well be eager to grasp the hands of their Negro brothers with respect, with devotion, and with humility.
Thank you. I think you can step down now, Mr. Race Prejudice.
You're finished with me?
For this hour.
What do they find me, you think?
Guilty.
That's what they always say. They even sentence me sometimes, draw up resolutions, planks, and pledges. Well, I guess I'll go back to my usual stomping ground.
Race Prejudice, Your Honor, the people, is going back to his hunting grounds among the frustrated, the insecure, the fearful, the misinformed, the exploiters of fear. You've heard the testimony of Race Prejudice. You've heard the testimony against him. He's been found guilty in every civilized court in the world. What is your verdict? Will it be to exterminate him?
You've just heard Destination Freedom's presentation of the second and last of its two-week series bearing directly upon racial prejudice in our society. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham, with Bob Gilbert as program consultant. The entire production was under the direction of Homer Heck. The role of Prejudice was played by Everett Clark, and the attorney was Ken Nordine. Others were Alma Platts, Dean Almquist, Oscar Brown Jr., George Kluge, and Fred Pinkard. The special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and was played by Elwin Owen and Jose Bethencourt. Sound effects by Cliff Miller, and the control operator was Gary DeVlieg. Your announcer is Hugh Downs. You're tuned for the stars on NBC.